When the book Dark Money came out, it received great reviews. It was named a 2016 Washington Post Notable Book, one of the New York Times 10 best books of the year, as well as an NPR, Newsweek, and Entertainment Weekly best book of the year. It traced the hidden money of the billionaires behind the rise of the radical right, answering questions like, why is America living in an age of profound and widening economic inequality? Why do billionaire candidates and contributors dominate our elections? And why have even modest attempts to address climate change been defeated again and again? The new edition of Dark Money includes a preface that examines the Koch brothers and their connections to President-elect Trump's cabinet members. Jane Mayer is a writer for The New Yorker magazine, a staff writer, and the author of three best-selling books. The latest is Dark Money, now out in paperback, and we welcome Jane Mayer to the roundtable this morning. Jane, thank you very much for being with us.
So great to be with you.
Very nice to have you back. Give us a sense of the reaction to the book, which was very strong, and where we are a year later from the book's original publication.
Well, I feel really fortunate. The book's gotten wonderful reception, great reviews, and got picked by The Times as one of the 10 best books of the year. So I can't complain about that. Where we are a year later is kind of in a different spot than many of us would have predicted. Donald Trump is president. He's not the choice that the Koch brothers would have chosen. They were ready to put $889 million behind their first choice for president, and yet by the time the Republican primaries were done, they didn't like the nominee. So they sat on the sidelines through much of the presidential race, and now they are looking at Trump with mixed feelings. But I think, to the surprise of many people who have kind of counted the Kochs out, what has happened is that Trump's government is filled with lobbyists from Koch Industries. It's filled with operatives who've worked for the Kochs, and even some of the members of their billionaire donor club are now members of the cabinet in Trump's administration. So they are not strangers to this administration. They've got their complaints about Trump, but they've also got many of their dreams coming true.
Given the emergence of Steve Bannon, what has the relationship been with him and the Koch brothers in the past?
Well, it's really hard to know about Bannon in particular. He actually has used language that would make him sound almost like Bernie Sanders some of the time. I mean, he's kind of railed against big donors and the corruption of the political system, and I actually think that kind of language helped get Trump elected. It made voters feel like Trump was not beholden to any, of the big money people. He was an independent force, as he sold himself. Bannon kind of speaks that language of populism. It is not the Koch's language, because of course they are the billionaire donors who want to pull all the strings and have been trying to for the last 40 years. So I wouldn't put them on the same wavelength necessarily.
But it certainly is important to point out, as you do in the preface and in the book, that even with the precarious relationship between the Kochs and Donald Trump, they still are very much pulling many, many strings.
Well, this is kind of the amazing thing, as I sit back as a reporter for the New Yorker magazine and watch what's going on. You would think from Trump's election that he was going to so-called drain the swamp, as he said, and throw the bums out and get rid of all the corruption in Washington. To the contrary, he has put in place so many people who have strings to the same big money forces. All of the fossil fuel industry, he's got all of the Koch's first choices running, the environmental policies that favor big oil, like their own company, who favor huge polluters. He's chosen, just to begin with, as his vice president, Mike Pence. There is no single politician who the Kochs liked better than Mike Pence. In 2012, Charles Koch, as I report in my book, begged Mike Pence to run for the presidency. Pence were the Kochs' favorite candidate. They put tons of money behind Pence's campaigns. And, you know, so he's right there at the elbow of Trump as vice president, and he is truly the Kochs' guy. Then there's a congressman who's always been known as the congressman from Koch, Mike Pompeo, who Trump has now put in to be his director of the CIA. Then you've got the choice for running the education department. Betsy DeVos has been one of the Kochs' closest allies. She's a billionaire in her own right, who, along with the Kochs, has been sort of trying to buy American politics and push it in their direction and her direction for years now, and they've been working together. So all over this government, you see the fingerprints of the Kochs and their allies. And then finally, the biggest backer, or one of the very biggest backers, I don't know if he's still the biggest, but for a long time he was, behind Trump himself is a hedge fund manager named Robert Mercer, who I write about in Dark Money, who was allied with the Kochs, huge contributor to their donor group, and he's been, if not the biggest, one of the biggest backers of Trump. And he and his daughter are, you know, his daughter was on the Trump transition, and his money is all over the Trump administration. It's just enough to make you wonder if you'll ever see a change in American politics, because supposedly Trump was the change, and he's got the same kinds of people and same billionaire donors with the same agenda all around him.
The whole point of your book is really this look at these billionaires and how they have bankrolled this plan, a systematic plan to fundamentally alter the political system. So when we as voters went to the polls in November electing Donald Trump, and I will say in the Electoral College, but electing Donald Trump as president of the United States, that bankrolling, as you say, this fits right into the plan, doesn't it?
Well, mostly. I mean, what I have to say is there are ways in which Trump, again, would not be the first choice of the Kochs. Part of it is because he's erratic. His personality is unreliable to them. They like politicians. there's an old joke and a story about an old robber baron who said, you know, he liked politicians who, when you buy them, they stay bought. Well, the problem with Trump is he's unreliable. He doesn't necessarily stay where you want him to stay. He's all over the place. So there are, on some issues, he's not where the Kochs would like him to be. They, for instance, on trade. They want free trade. They want no tariffs. They want open immigration because they want cheap labor. And so some of the things that Trump's talking about are not things that are good for their business, that in particular. Other things he's doing line right up with their economic interests. He wants to drop their taxes on the richest people in the country, get rid of estate taxes that, you know, keep this country from becoming an aristocracy. They love that. And he wants to put in place policies on the environment and particularly on global warming that are exactly what the oil companies want. That's issue number one for them, and they're very, very happy with that. So he's mostly delivering for them. There are a few places where he's just, as I said, unreliable for them.
And how does this work with the American people and what we keep on hearing about in these few days of the administration of how does this work with his base? Meaning that if you say you're going to drain the swamp and you haven't really done that, but you're still getting done essentially what you said you are getting done, does that work well with that base?
Well, it's early yet, and I think it's very hard to know. I think that is you're asking the big question, which is, are the people who voted for Trump going to be you know, do they feel like there's been a bait and switch or not? He campaigned as a populist who was going to serve the interests of blue-collar workers and middle-class workers who've really been stiffed over the years. And he promised he would protect Social Security and Medicare, which are positions that the other Republican candidates wouldn't pay allegiance to. So let's see if he's really serving their interests or not. It's early, and we can't really, you know, there so far you can't see that what the base is saying and thinking yet. You know, it's been, you know, just a little over a week. It's been an incredible, you know, 8 or 9 days though. But hard to know how the base is taking it yet.
Jane Mayer is our guest. The book is Dark Money, which is now out in paperback, which includes a new preface as well. What got you looking into this initially, of looking at the bankrolling and really the web that was created for this dark money and how successful it has been?
Well, I mean, I've been in Washington, believe it or not, since Reagan was elected. I covered Reagan for the Wall Street Journal, his White House. And so I've been following politics for a long time. And the more I wrote about politics, the more I came to believe that you can't really explain it to the country unless you follow the money. Money is just so important in explaining what's going on in Washington. And so I kept trying to diligently follow the money trails. And when it came to the Republican side, what I found was I kept looking at all these different groups popping up and putting money into politics. And I'd go look up their paperwork and their tax filings. And lo and behold, every time you turn over a rock, the money trail would go back to these two brothers who own the second largest private company in America, the Koch brothers. And so I just started, you know, trying to chart out what they were doing. It was all beneath the surface when I started going. And I just, you know, it became more and more mind-boggling. So I felt like, okay, I'm going to write a book, and I'm going to lay this out so that the American public can kind of understand why politics is so broken. We all looked at Congress and we wondered, why can't it get anything done? Why is this government going the opposite direction from every other government in the world practically when it comes to doing something about climate change, which seems to be kind of a growing emergency? And why aren't we doing anything? Well, the answer is there's an incredible amount of money that's tying Congress's hands. And most of it's coming from oil barons who make money off of, you know, keeping us from doing anything about climate change. And a lot of that comes through these Koch groups, which don't seem connected on the surface, but underneath have these tangled roots that are all connected. It's the same money stream. So I basically wrote the book hoping that I could educate the rest of the country and let them in on the secret I was seeing.
When the book came out and we started to use this term, dark money, more and more, it seemed to me there was a point where it got co-opted a little bit, perhaps like the term fake news. Did you sense that as well?
Well, I mean, dark money, it wasn't a term that I coined. It was out there. But dark money just refers originally to undisclosed money flowing into politics, money from anonymous sources. And, you know, there's a lot of it coming from a lot of different directions. So it may mean different things to different people. To me, in this book, what it's about is how after Citizens United, the Supreme Court's decision in 2010, the floodgates opened for secret spending by people who didn't want the country to know that they were putting money into politics. And pretty much about 3/4 of that spending is on the right side, the side of the conservative side. So that's what I was writing about in this book, the secret spending going into politics. And I was trying to explain, okay, who are the people who don't want you to know that they're putting all this money into politics? And what is it they're hiding?
What is it, do you believe, they are hiding?
I think what they're trying to hide is their self-interest. I think that they have spent hundreds of millions, billions, with this group of donors, in trying to convince the public that what they're doing is just virtuous and generous and just for the American, you know, they just because they care about other Americans. And so they sort of have defined a lot of things that actually are really in service of their own private interest as being in the public's interest. And I think that what they didn't want people to realize was who they were putting this money into it, because if you take a look at who they are, you can see there's a reason why they're spending all that money. It's a very small investment for a lot of these big businessmen compared to what they get back. When their taxes are lowered, they get a huge savings. And so if they can convince the country that it's good for everyone when the top bracket's taxes are dropped, it's great for them.
Is there a sense that the money that is being spent, and that the money is in politics? I mean, you spoke about this a moment ago, that it's hard to look at where we are right now and have optimism of this cleaning up in any way, shape, or form. So is there then, do you believe, a way that we can deal with it?
Well, I mean, but despite it all, I am maybe cautiously optimistic, in that I've been around for a while and seen reform take place. You have something like the scandal of Watergate, and then there are new rules on spending money. Eventually, the money works its way back in. Then you have more scandals and more reforms. I think we're at a point that's kind of a breaking point right now, in terms of the amount of money in politics and in terms of the role that a handful of the billionaire donors are playing. They have bought huge influence over American politics. Among that group, I would include Donald Trump. I mean, people sort of seem to think that he got elected without money because he didn't take a ton from other billionaires. He's a billionaire himself who spent $66 million of his own money. That's not exactly an advertisement for cleaning up politics. So I do think, though, that when the public gets mad, they do create change. And I think the public's really pretty mad. I think Bernie Sanders' success, and in a weird way, the sort of populist language that Trump got elected on, shows the public really wants change in this area. So I think we're ripe for it.
What was the reaction, or how much of the reaction did you get from the Koch brothers regarding the book?
Well, they for a minute or two they tried to attack it, but it held fast, because I was really careful and had fantastic help from fact checkers and editors and lawyers, and so they were unable to dent it. But they actually went after me personally in a kind of an amazing way. It was after my first story on them in The New Yorker came out. And I tell this story in the book. It took me a long time to be able to unravel it and be able to tell the story. But they hired a private detective to dig up dirt on me. The man they hired was the former chief of police in New York City, Howard Safer. And he tried to find anything he could that would damage my reputation and then plant it in the press. And they came close to getting a false story in print, but luckily I got wind of it and was able to catch it in time and tell them I would sue them if they put it in print. But they were playing hardball.
So we can only extrapolate that on the games of hardball that they play on many other levels with many other people to get their message across.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I in some ways I should just be flattered that they took it so seriously, but they've gone after so many people over so many years. I mean, it's one of the reasons this book took me 5 years to report and write, in part because so many people who I interviewed were afraid to talk. They're intimidating characters. The Koch brothers, you have to remember, between the two of them, they're worth something like $85 billion dollars. That's a lot of firepower. And there are not a lot of people in this country who really want to take on $85 billion worth of opposition. And so but the good thing is there are people who know them, who've worked with them, who've watched them, who have guts, and who want to try to, you know, speak up so that they don't see the country become an oligarchy. And so, you know, but over the years, the Kochs have gone after other people, including, I tell the story in the book about an FBI agent who they hired a private eye to tail because he was investigating Koch Industries for the U.S. Senate. And he is one tough guy, and he tells a great story in this book. He stopped them dead in their tracks. But you've got to see it to believe it.
Hmm. What does it say, and maybe I'm also just looking for some optimism, but what does it say that given their uncomfortable relationship, the Koch brothers, with Donald Trump, they were unable to, quote-unquote, buy the White House?
Well, I think what it shows you is that the electorate, which was choosing the Republican nominee, and chose is not in line with what they want. I think this has actually long been true. They've been trying to buy the country because the voters really don't want what they want. And the problem was they waited out the Republican primaries. They didn't get involved, and traditionally they've not been involved in the presidential primaries. So they thought they'd get a nominee who they could then put nearly $1 billion behind. But to their dismay, the Republican voters chose a nominee that wasn't in line with what they want, and they were left out of the game. You know, does it show that their money doesn't work? No, because they didn't actually spend it. They thought they were going to be able to spend it, but they ended up with someone they couldn't support. They thought a lot about getting involved in the primary race, but they didn't. They just don't tend to do that, and their strategy screwed them up. So that's what happened.
Again, the name of the book is Dark Money, The Hidden History of the Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right. It is now out in paperback from Anchor Books. It has a new preface. Jane Mayer, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Again, the name of the new book is Dark Money, The Hidden History of the Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right. It's published in paperback by Anchor Books by Jane Mayer. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.